Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Let's Watch podcast. I'm your host, James, with my co-host, Carolyn.
There's me.
And today we are doing both Fear Street Part 2 and Part 3, and maybe Part 4 in there as well today. And we're going to talk about them as a whole, not separate, because at some point, you know, it's the same story. So what are we really at? And the second one doesn't have a much story that... You know, it's I just get into it. I like the second movie, but it doesn't add much to like the greater story, I guess. It doesn't move the plot forward.
So I'll read the plot of 2 and then I'll read the plot of 3 and then we can just hop into it.
What about 4?
What is 4?
Well, I mean, we'll get there, but read the synopsis.
So number 2 is 1978. Shadyside, 1978. School's out for the summer and the activities at Camp Nightwing are about to begin. But when another Shadysider is possessed with the urge to kill, the fun in the sun becomes a gruesome fight for survival. And so basically Friday the 13th. And then Fear Street Part 3, 1666. The origins of Sarah Fear's curse are finally revealed as history comes full circle on a night that changes the lives of Shadysiders forever.
But what about Fear Street 1994 Part 2?
Well, okay, fair. I get what you're saying now. That was... Great. We'll get to that. But first, Fear Street 2. I thought it's interesting. Yes, there's not a whole lot to actually talk about in Fear Street 2 because it operated as like a mainly just a slasher and it was very Friday 13th-y.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the guy's name is Tommy.
Yeah. But what's cool, I mean, I know someone who said that of the Fear Streets, it was their favorite because it was the one that was most like just straight up standalone horror movie-esque, like slasher. That said, I don't like slashers, but I liked this one. I thought it was really good. It definitely was much more slasher and much more straightforward than the first one or the third one.
Well, it wasn't a goofy slasher, right? Like,
no.
He was actually menacing and terrifying.
And, like, I don't know how I felt about the slashing of all of the literal children.
Well, you knew that going in, right? But they only...
I didn't think we'd see it, though. And like I thought it would be teenagers... These were like 12-year-olds.
Well, the only people we ever saw die on screen were teenagers. Mm-hmm. Any younger children, we only heard it, which is effective.
But we saw their bits later.
Yeah, but never their bodies, right? It was like we saw like a limb, but it was, and the bodies were covered after. I think it's like they handled it in as well as they could have, considering that's what the story they were going for. Like, I found it like upsetting as well, but also I was like, okay, they're not showing that. They're just showing us that those characters have died, and that's also, I don't think they're like, I think they're probably like 15.
I don't know, that little 12-year-old man.
I know, but the 15-year-olds can look like that. My assumption is that they're 15 or like 15 to 14 because the Ziggy, Sadie Sink, is 17, right? And the counselors are like 18 to 19.
Yeah.
So I think they're all kind of in the same broad generation speaking. Yeah. But I did think, I was surprised that they were murdering straight up children as well. Because they looked like children.
Yeah.
But the ones that we saw on screen were the older older teenage adults. I would assume they're all adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they were all the ones that we saw were counselors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they would be adults, and those kills were pretty brutal, as we know. If you've seen the first one, it's in line with that.
This film is interesting. It definitely did feel like a bridging film.
It did, and a lot of background on Sarah Fear.
Yeah, exactly. I did think it was a cool piece of the puzzle. Like when I was watching it, I kind of came out a bit underwhelmed. When I was thinking about it later, I was like, all the tunnel stuff is actually pretty cool. And like, yeah, finding out the background and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it definitely, it felt like the second film, you know?
Yeah, it definitely felt like, okay, this character in the present is important and this is a fun story to tell. So we're going to do it. And, you know, we've cast Sadie Sink. Who
was really good in it.
Yes, I think she's she was so much better than the other actors she was interacting with other than her sister.
I liked her sister a lot too.
Yes. I mean, you're supposed to. They're like the two.
That's what was interesting is, well, I also liked the change of her sister because like it was
character
believable.
Development in a slasher film? What is this?
I know. And like normally the actors, especially in a slasher, are only capable of doing one of those two roles. But this person, yeah, really went from being the goody-goody to not, or to like, I guess, devolving back into her former self. But you actually believed it with her. I thought she was really good. But my one complaint, other than the complaints that I've already made, so my one other complaint is that there was so much exposition in this film.
Yes, like, there was.
There were whole scenes where they're like doing the big dramatic speech and things like that. And I felt like that was like, it wasn't the case in the first one. Like the first one was way more chaotic. And I don't know if that's good or bad. But this one definitely had them doing like rousing speeches, which I'm never down for, you know?
Yeah. And this is, I would agree with that. It is, there's a lot of exposition dumping in this. And you're mm-hmm. like, oh my God, okay. Like you are loading us up now because obviously this is going to be important in the third movie. And you mm-hmm. want us to remember it so you don't have to tell us it again. But I was like, oh my God, okay. And it's like, I get, yeah. And there was rousing speeches. There was I have like two complaints about the second one. One is that I wish they cast better actors against Sadie Sink.
Mm-hmm.
And she also looks significantly older than apparently her peers in this. Mm-hmm. Because I know her, she's, I think, 19 in real life. So pretty young, and they make her look young,
mm-hmm.
but she looks like she's acting against like people who are actually like 16 to 15, and there's a pretty big age. She looks closer to her sister's age than the other campers, at least what I thought.
Yeah.
And we just are not gonna follow the laws of like body physics here with
oh
the
my
woman
God.
Who
Everyone...
had like a broken like through, she broke her ankle through the skin, and her
yeah.
The older sister, whose name I'm forgetting, Christine?
Yeah.
Or something like that, just wraps it up with a bandage and puts a comb on there, and then all of a sudden she can walk?
Oh, it's Cindy? Cindy?
Cindy, right. And Cindy and Ziggy.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden she can, like, walk, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I saw her break her leg, and I was like, oh, okay, well, this character's stuck down here.
Well, do you not recall that Dina got stabbed at the end of the first movie and then was wandering around?
But I think a broken bone through the skin is like a little, like you can't walk, even if you like set it and put support there, like you can't physically walk. Like that is not how bones work. But I was like, it's also a dumb slasher, whatever. I'm not going to push too much thought into it. And I'm like, obviously this character is not in the future movies. So
yeah.
We'll get past it. But I thought that was the one part I was like, this is a little ridiculous even for a slasher film.
Yeah.
And as I was watching this, I was like, the first movie had like it duped you in a little bit, right? Like there was stuff that you were like, so I was like, what is it going to be? What is the reveal? Like there, obviously they felt like there was something they needed to tell this story for the second movie. So what is the reveal that they're going to show us at the end of this movie about the current time? Like there has to be something that is either a lie or has not been told to us. There's an assumption, right, that is wrong in the present time.
Yeah, because the end of the first movie, you know what happens in the second movie already. Like, you know, it's not like we're even watching it for the case of what happened in 1978, because we know, we've been told. So yeah, that was a fear that I had going into the second one. And I think I mentioned that in the last one, is like, is there a point to watching a whole movie when you know how it ends?
Exactly. And I was very much the same way, too. So I was like, there has to be something mm-hmm. that we're missing, right? And I guess the ultimate, there's like two reveals, right? Is that we go in assuming the sister that is aged up is Cindy.
Man, I knew, though, that it was Ziggy. I don't know why I knew, but that wasn't a reveal for me. Like the whole movie, I was like, I feel like they want us to think a certain thing. But also, what's her face? Jillian Jacobs, her hair is red.
No, it's brown.
Yeah, but it's kind of gingery brown. It's definitely not like the dark brown that is that Cindy has. So like, yeah, I knew the whole movie that Ziggy was going to end up being the sister. I just didn't know how.
I didn't realize until you know, she put her hand on the bones or whatever, mm-hmm. or in the blood fell on there, and I was like, "Oh. Okay." And then I was like, "Oh." And then as you watch the end of that movie, you're like, Yeah, I think it'd be a little more ridiculous if the older sister lived, considering she got like axed in the chest like 7 times. And I was like, how are you gonna?
Well, she was also still speaking after she got axed in the chest 100 times.
I was, and like with most slasher films, they do the thing, right? Like, it's a common trope in slasher films, like where the killer can kill one person in one swipe, but for like an important character, it takes like 15. And you're like, how is she talking? This guy is just like, and he's hitting the same spot repeatedly. How is the axe not like gone through her body? We've seen this axe like decapitate people.
I was glad, I must say, that when they had all of the bad guys appear like they did in the first movie, they got through that pretty quickly because it was really awesome and suspenseful in the first one. But I was very glad that they kind of were like, okay, they're here. We know that this is a thing that happens, but we don't need to show you it for 10 minutes again.
No, and only one of them is super important in that moment. And it is the one that actually stabs Ziggy because that is important in the third movie for that character. But no, I think the second one is probably the easiest one to immediately jump in and watch because it is very much like, hey, it's a horror movie at a summer camp.
But it's cool because they did add a lot of stuff that was important to the third one, like the underground tunnels and things like that. Like, I like that there was like callbacks to things like that.
The goopy heart.
Yeah. And like, you honestly believe that this all takes place in the same world because in the three different time zones, we see the same tree or the same hatch or whatever. And so you kind of, I liked that element of it.
It helps with the geography of the town, right? It does. We have a greater understanding of where things are in relation to everything. Yeah. And that we understand that the remains have been moved. So yeah. There's a definitive goal. Now it's like, okay, they need to do this to do this now. And I liked it. I think this one is, I found it a little more fun than the first one.
A great music.
It did have great music. They kept playing the song over the young, over young Nick Good, the man who sold the world. And I'm like, is that foreshadowing? Maybe. Also, because the reveal that Nick isn't a good guy. Who is obviously the sheriff in the current timeline. And it's like, yeah, my guy, he's a cop. Okay, we get that.
It's interesting because, so yeah, my one vibe coming out of the first one was, well, I hope the second one is more than just telling us something we already know. And my vibe coming out of the second one was that I was really glad, well, really hoping that the third one wouldn't be another storytelling flashback somehow thing. And I was really glad that it wasn't.
Well, like the end of the second one, it shows what Dina is putting the hand back on the body. Right?
Yeah.
And she has her blood on her hand because your nose bleeds if you touch this witch's bone or touch Seraphir's bones. And then she goes back and the end of this movie is reveals that she becomes Seraphir in 1666. And we can, the third movie, jumping into it, I guess we can just go right into it, is Dina and all of the characters from current and 78 timeline existing as the people back in 1666 with different names. So Dina is Seraphir. Sam is forgetting the character's name. Dina's brother is Harvey. Simon and Kate are back. The kids from, or Tommy is playing Mad Thomas, the killer from the second one. They have Sadie Sink for one scene briefly because, you know, they could only get her for one movie.
Yeah, it's interesting because at the end of the second movie and the beginning of the third, I couldn't tell at first if it was like a flashback, which it was, or if Dina had actually been zapped back into time by touching these bones. And it was unclear for the first like couple seconds. But like, I didn't know if she was going to have to like pretend to be Sarah and like not be caught or something.
But they make them do the accents.
They do. Yes. What's cool is everyone. Yeah. You see all the characters that you know and love and all the actors and stuff, which was like, honestly, really glad to see Kate again. Simon. Well, and like, oh my God, I like Simon way better in the 1600s.
Well, they're barely characters. Like, they don't even speak much.
But they get to, like, make facial expressions, and you get to see them, and it's kind of like a nice little nod. But what I also like is that there are several times where this movie and era, I guess, implies that these are all of their like descendants, or they're descendants of these people.
Yeah, yeah, their ancestors.
And it kind of makes sense that it's like, I mean, it's one thing to be like, okay, Sarah Fear, I mean, is probably not an ancestor of Dina, but you get the point. Sarah Fear is in love with Hannah Miller, and Dina, who is Sarah Fear, is in love with Sam. Sure. But it's really nice that people like Kate and Simon, it's like you can kind of be like, oh yeah, like our great, 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 great grandparents knew each other back in that small town too, you know? And like, you don't need them to be best friends in that small town. You don't need them to have the same Goonies plot, but it's nice that they're there, you know?
Yeah, they're of the same age group. I liked the going back to 1666. I was kind of like, when they initially were, I'm like, you're really going to make them all do the accents? And then I was like, well, okay, the only one who's really talking a lot is Dina, and she can kind of do it. Everybody else who Mad Thomas can do it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, okay, so we're not going to make every actor do this, mm-hmm, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And but you could see the limitations of their budget in this, mm-hmm, one. I think most explicitly is that I was like, it kind of, it's like some, like I would notice like some people would like look proper to the time and, mm-hmm, stuff, but obviously because I assumed they shot these back to back.
Mm-hmm.
Or this was a part of the Fear Street 1's group shooting time, mm-hmm, would be my assumption, right? So it's like, you know, some people have different hair and like the hair doesn't really look like 1666. Or like some people are like weirdly too clean for the time and other people are dirty, mm-hmm, and that sort of stuff. And that, but that's like a minor quibble. And but I was like, okay.
The set felt small too in that it sense. Did. Like it, all of the other worlds felt really big and this world felt really small. But I guess the idea is that they're taking place on like this small settlement that's basically the size of the summer camp.
Yeah. But it did feel.
But my guess is that they had to build this set from scratch and all, yes, the other ones were locations that they found. And this was the only one that they had to like build.
Yeah. And I bet, you know, they didn't have a bunch of time to shoot this would be my, mm-hmm, guess as well. And forgot that Sheriff Good is playing Solomon Good in the past as well. And he's kind, mm-hmm, of he's in where Sunnyvale would be. He's, mm-hmm, not really a part of the town. He's close, but he's left and, mm-hmm, he lives in a different place. And he is the, as you're going through 1666, you're like, OK, well, we've had the reveal, mm-hmm, of stuff not entirely being what it seems. So like, I assume, and I don't think this is a wrong assumption going in either for either of us. We probably assumed that Sarah Fear wasn't what they said she was.
That became pretty clear in the first few moments of the movie, which is interesting because the first two movies, I was still pretty sold that maybe she was bad. Within the first 2 minutes of the third movie, I was like, no, Sarah is either going to be a good guy who it was never her fault, or someone who was good that the town terrorized so much that she became evil. Yeah. And I didn't know which one of those it would be. I kind of thought she would become evil.
That's where I was as well. And I was, mm-hmm, like, once they put Dina in that role, I was like, mm-hmm, okay, so this character isn't bad.
No,
right?
She's
like,
sympathetic.
There is, it has to be some good. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there has to be something that either has been done to Sarah, mm-hmm, or Sarah is just good. And, you know, as we go through that, I liked that part. I liked like the slow realization of who actually caused all the curse of Shady, mm-hmm, essentially, is like what is behind it, which is like the whole point of this one is to show us like the origins of Sarah, but like the origins of the curse as well of being.
Yeah.
Like,
which tied it all together because in the first movie, I was like, guys, shut up about your town, you know, like, cause that's such a trope and it's a trope I don't like in a lot of movies. That's like, my town sucks, you know, I'll never, mm-hmm, get out of my town. They literally can't. This movie tells you that, like they can't, their town is cursed.
It is. And I liked that. And I liked how it was like revealed to be a real thing. And I was like, as we're going through this, I was like, we're going through this pretty quick. Right. Like I was like, are we really going to spend 2 hours back in 1666? And I was like, going into this, I assumed there we'd go back to modern time at some point because...
To wrap it up.
But I, mm-hmm, I didn't see, like, around halfway through this movie, we get the resolution of what happened to Sarah Fear. And then, boom, we're back in the present. And they have another title card that says Fear Street 1994 Part 2.
I literally cheered. my household, we were like, yay! Because it was, we love Fear Street 1994 Part 1. But what I liked is that the first bit didn't feel rushed. Like, thinking back on it, I'm like, oh, yeah, they did cover everything pretty quickly. But it didn't feel rushed. And it was, okay, I will say this one thing about this. The first part of this third part is the only part of this series that doesn't feel horror movie-esque. It's much more drama, which is fine. Yeah. But it's also, you're so distracted with trying to figure out the main arc and how it's connected to this story and how everything fits together that, like, I think even if it was scary, you wouldn't be paying attention to that. You know, you're too distracted to be scared.
Yeah, it's more, I mean, horrific stuff happens in 1666, but it's more like a psychological falling apart, right? And as the people around you are going like mob crazy, and their world is collapsing around them, and like what happens. And I liked the, obviously, like, I do think it's a little on the nose that the person with the name Good is evil. But I did like the reveal that it was the family who like runs Sunnyvale is the people that have caused Shadyside's problem.
Yes.
And that this person who presents themselves as a good person is not a good person.
I mean, this movie was really true to real life. It's like, insult a man and he burns you at the stake. You know?
Yeah, and it's like, this guy's like, I'm on your side, I'm on your side, you're on your side. Wait a minute now. You're going to be the fall guy here. So, sorry, but they're going to believe me over you. And that I realized that, I mean, once the main, like, Nick Good, the actor, is playing both Solomon and Nick Good, like, it's come on, and then it gets back to modern time, and I that's the reveal is from that, is that, oh, it's these guys, we now know how to stop them. They tell Christine that she's been being duped by this guy the whole time. And then he becomes the real, he becomes like the monster in the third part, along with all the other ones, but they're pretty secondary as well. And
man, they're so fun to watch. I was really glad. See, unlike in the second one, when I was like, okay, let's not show all the bad guys coming again. In the third one, I was really down for all the bad guys to come again.
Yeah. And I really liked like 1994 part two, because it's like, okay, this is a resolution. We have like, we got, Dina and Josh, and then we have Christine, and then they just go get I was like, oh no, they're gonna get the mall janitor. I was like, is this the man who's just gonna get killed? Like, we need somebody to die. So they went and found this random character, but he doesn't, and he has helped the team, and it's very it's almost like a little Home Alone-y.
And my god, it was fun.
It was. And I liked like that the cop is the bad guy. The guy who was like making fun of them at the beginning and being like, this isn't real. Right? Like, okay, I believe you, whatever. Right? And it's like, oh.
Well, and also when he slipped that note under Ziggy, adult Ziggy's door, you kind of get the idea that like,
he's on their side.
Yeah, that he was in denial or something like that. Like, he didn't want to believe them because he would sound crazy. And then he does believe them, but is still a good guy. You know?
Yes. And it does, they don't leave anything up for interpretation in this film. There's flashbacks to young Nick, and he's like, you know, I don't want my birthright. And it's like, okay, this man is pathetic. But I did like how every bad guy, or all the villains, come into the mall and they trap them, right? And I liked how Ziggy had to trap the one who stabbed her. And then they use the blood trick again in very fun ways of like, I mean, obviously it's like, well, you know, they're gonna, and the callback to the carrying and everything. And it's very well done. I liked it a lot. It's like a lot of fun while it's happening as well. But I like legitimately like cared about Dina, Sam, Josh, and Ziggy. It was like, going back to the second one, is like, I don't care about any of these characters, right? Because we know the one who gets out.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't care about them.
Yeah, and I have no investment in him. And in the third part, it's like, I did care. I ended up caring about Sarah Fear.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, and I was like, okay. And I think that's the biggest success of this franchise, is that even though it is like kind of playing in the dumb slasher, dumb horror movie teen tropes, that it does find time to humanize and give you reasons to care about like the main characters. And like that, even like Simon and Kate are like important characters, even though they have died, and that they don't forget about them, right? Like, they're dead, but they're still part of the people's stories. And I'm kind of amazed that they pulled off a trilogy of horror films like this, and it works.
Well, and the writing is like, for the most part. There are some parts that, yeah, are too exposition-y, but like for the most part, it's really clever how they tied all of this together. And like, it's fascinating. I have never seen a trilogy of movies that also sort of work mostly as standalone movies, but also is kind of like a mini series. Like, it doesn't feel like a threequel of movies. It feels like a series, but movies, you know?
Yes. I would agree with that. I would not be surprised if somebody told me like these movies came out over 6 years. I would be like, oh, I believe that.
Yeah.
And it's like,
but the thing is, you wouldn't care as much because it's like, it's the same reason that you can watch an original movie and then watch the sequel. And it doesn't feel like you're watching, like, it just feels like you're watching like the next part of the story. These three, in order to get the full impact, you have to watch all three.
Yes, you do. And I think it's worth it. I think all of them are of equal of quality. Like, none of them are, like, they're different types of storytelling, but they're all effective, and they make sure to give you enough of Dina throughout all of them so you don't get lost, essentially. Yeah. And I do think, I really do like the choice of making Dina's actress play Sarah Fear in the past. It's like a very easy way to make you, because I do wonder if that was, because there is another actress who is playing Sarah, like the real Sarah.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it would have been, if it's effective, if it was her. You'd be like, okay, we're having to do another flashback with new characters.
And I also appreciate that, well, first off, I really like the person who played Dina. So I was glad to see her in more, and we're already connected to her. So you're right. I think it would be different. But I also liked that, like, in this 1666 flashback or whatever, it kind of implied that all these people were, like, you know, descendants or ancestors of the characters we know and love. But it never felt like Dina is descended from Sarah Fear. That's why she looks exactly like Sarah Fear, because we've seen that too many times, where you go back in time or it's like someone's great-grandpa is still played by them and that sort of thing. I like that it's like, it's not saying here that she is descended from Sarah Fear, because Sarah Fear doesn't actually look like her, and they make that clear, but it's almost like she embodies it and lives her life for a moment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would agree with that. I wonder, because they do the thing at every end of every horror movie, right? They're like a little stinger of like, maybe there's more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do wonder if there is going to be more Fear Street movies. Mm-hmm. With these characters, or are they going to do more Fear Street movies, but it's like an entirely new story just by the same creators?
I feel like new story, and I also feel like it won't work as well as this one.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at as well. But I do really want to see, I want to see more of this type of swing of storytelling. It's like, okay, we're going to do three movies, release one a week, and they're all going to be connected in a universe.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but boom, it's out and over, so like you don't have to wait a really long time. You can get the resolution very quickly and somehow make the movies all good is the other thing. It's like there's no one where it's like, well, that one was kind of bad, but you know, whatever. So I do want to, I would be interested to see what other, I'm like, does it, obviously it's going to be horror, and I think horror is the one that this works the best in, but I'm interested to see like what could they do this again is the main thing.
Well, they have more source material, so for those who don't know, this was the story is by R.L. Stine, our resident Goosebumps writer. And he wrote a Fear Street series. And so they basically, I don't know if they're in order, but they picked three Fear Street movies and kind of tied them together. Again, I haven't read the Fear Street books, but yeah, so that's basically what they did. It was based on some of his books. So there is more material that they could work from.
Yeah, but I feel like I don't want to see them doing like Fear Street, like 1960 something, right? It's like, I don't really need that gap filled in. You're just going to show me a killer kill people. It's like not particular, especially when we know they all die.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the reveal of like the 1666 one is like, it just happens very quickly. And then people realize it's happened. So I was like, oh, so that killer wasn't super interesting then, right? Like he just did it and then was killed quickly.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's why it's like, oh, the 1971, it makes sense because he actually kind of went on a rampage. Like it took time for him to kill. But I was like, did the other ones just like brutally murder some people quickly and then they're killed quickly? So it's not super interesting. I would like them to do something new.
Yeah, I agree. But you're right. That's actually a good point about the second one is that like they mention all of these murderers and all this stuff. But it's not until you watch the second one that you actually get what a horrible impact this would have on the town, because so many people died in that movie. And that's one of like hundreds of serial killers they've had. So that's the one movie that really like, yeah, because the first one, a couple of people are shot. It's a tragedy, but people seem to kind of move on pretty quickly. But that the second one makes you be like, oh God, this is horrible. And then when you see all of the murderers at the end, you're like, oh, and there's like 10 of them, you know?
Yes. And like how the trauma would carry throughout the town, right? And there's a bunch of people, how it's kind of, it would make sense to being like that would stick to the town then. And they would mm-hmm. be known as that. And it's also, it's like where a lot of low income people live as well. Mm-hmm. They make that pretty clear. And it's like, I also did like the designs of all the killers. It's like, okay, we have our Jason, like we have our Michael Myers, like we have our, what's the song where it's like gave you 40 wax?
I have no idea.
It's like the, it's like a, it, and that's the man with the, that's the boy with the bat, but it was,
he scared me.
Yeah, but it was like, it's like a,
oh, it's Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 wax.
That's who I thought the boy with the bat was referencing, right? Because mm-hmm. he did just whack people.
Mm-hmm.
Skullface, obviously. Scream. I couldn't really place the man with like the long mask
mm-hmm.
who like drowned people. I didn't know that reference. And I don't really know who the Ruby Lane reference is either. Is the only ones that I was confused with.
I mean, I feel like Ruby Lane is any movie that has like a seductress. You know what I mean?
Femme fatale.
Yeah.
But what about the man who with the mask who drowns people?
He made me think of like kind of like witch doctors back in the day is what he made me think of.
Yeah, but I was like, okay, I some of them are. I was like, oh, okay, maybe the. Some of them are maybe original, or are they references mm-hmm. I just don't understand? It's like, then why didn't you use that guy instead of the Friday the 13th, like?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's name is literally Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very important Tommy in the Friday the 13th franchise. I was like, we're just hitting this on the nose, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed this trilogy of films. I would like to see what the creators of this do in the future. If they decide to do something else like this, or maybe they just want to make horror movies, I would watch whatever. I really want to see more of the actors that play like Dina and Sam and Josh. I think they're all very good.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Dina's actress. I like her a lot. I was like, okay.
Yeah, like she's the only one who can act in Trinkets.
She can. But no, I think these are, I'm glad we watched them. I think they're great movies.
Yeah, I think mainly, I kind of came out of this series with three thoughts.
Uh-oh.
Cops are evil.
Mm.
That's something we knew, but.
I did like that. I was very, yes, make the cop the bad guy. I'm there for it.
Mm-hmm. Second thing, lesbians mm-hmm. get shit done.
Well, do they?
Well, yeah, good point. With the cliffhanger, who's to say? And then. The third thing, sometimes it takes 300 years for a woman to get someone to listen to her.
Okay,
you know?
Come on.
It's true, though.
Okay, come on. That's not true. I think both of us liked this a lot because of the romance was not hetero romance.
It was so good, too.
They had really good chemistry.
Yes. In both the 1666s, when there are different characters, and in current times.
Yeah, and you really felt like Dina really cares about Sam. So this makes 1,000% she would go to this length to save her. Mm-hmm. Because at some point it's like, Dina, you don't have to do this, right? Like mm-hmm. you could, but they do. And I believed that relationship and the strength of it. And that it is just good to see. And that nobody judged it either, right? Like mm-hmm. it was never, they did a really good job handling that.
Mm-hmm.
I will say Dina's vest at the end is bad.
Her vest?
Yeah. I didn't like it. I was like, this is not your style, but okay. It's not good. But my assumption is that there's going to be more Fear Street movies in this universe because the book got taken at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or it will be moved to like a different town or something, but that book is going to be that thing that links everything.
Yeah. Yeah. What I like is that it's like it leaves it open or it leaves room for other films or shows or whatever about that. But I also like that it's not a cliffhanger. It's not like there's movies that you watch it and it feels unfinished because they add something at the end. And then there's movies like this where you basically see like the zombie's arm punch through the ground and everyone in the theater goes, oh, you know, like, but it doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it does leave it open for them to add things. But it's not like we feel cheated by the book being taken away.
Exactly. If nothing, if they never make another one, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
It's never, it's just a, it's a fun stinger. But do you have anything else you want to say about these? You have like a fourth point that you forgot about, or did you want to make it three because there was three movies?
I made it three because there's three movies, but bonus point since there's a bonus movie. Ooh. I loved the music throughout all of these parts. I thought it was awesome.
It really does a good job setting the time.
Yep.
It really makes you, I know what I've complained about it before, but it never does the thing where like the movie's playing over top of characters experiencing emotion, telling us what to feel, but it is giving information on who those characters are.
Yeah, and on the setting and stuff, like the first one had a lot of 90s music and it was a lot of fun. And then you go into the 70s and suddenly they had like totally switched the tone, even like not even just in scenes where they're physically playing music, but in scenes where the music is like overlaid.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, we're in the 70s. We're going to make you feel like you're in the 70s.
Exactly. And they played, you know, 1666 music.
Yes, like ye old hymns.
No, but. We're going to do more spooky movies because it's Carolyn's favorite season.
It is my favorite season, but I'm living alone right now, so I get scared.
So for the next time, we're going to be doing The Green Knight and then Raw. And then that will take us until our next time we'll be recording after we do those two.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be recording on Halloween, the spookiest time to record. We'll have so many technical problems. It will be truly amazing.
Yeah, the ghosts will haunt our microphones.
They will. Lights my microphone will actually just, my microphone will actually just break.
We have enough tech issues on a regular day. We don't need the ghosts getting involved.
they're already doing it. So for the next two, it will be Green Knight first, then Raw. Two movies, one spooky adjacent and then one actually horrific. So thank you for listening. You can find Carolyn at
CarolynDunk93 on Instagram and Twitter. And where can they find you?
You can find me everywhere at James Willicks, except for on Twitter where the O is a zero. And you can find this podcast on all places. You can send us an email at letswatchpod@gmail.com. Maybe you all could slide into Dina's DMs for Carolyn.
Please.
But like friend DM. Being like, please. Oh, okay.
No, yep. You know. Friend DM. Friend DM.
Friend
I want to be her bro.
I really like her voice. She has a great voice.
And a great face.
Okay. We're just going full horny now. Okay. Is that what we're doing?